of people in the room today, which means I guess there's a lot of excitement about Windows 8. All right. Who here's running Windows 8? Excellent. Excellent. And who here has like a Surface or something cool like that? All right, y'all suck. Who here won one? Anyone win one today? Really? Or this week? Nice. So I'm excited to talk about this topic. My name is Corey Roth. I work at a company called Infusion, based out of Houston, Texas. And more recently, a small startup app company called SP2 for SharePoint. And my particular company does a lot of, been doing a lot of POCs around Windows 8, and not to really talk about them, but it got me interested in. I thought, I see all these cool things, nice little touch-capable, flashy apps. And I thought, you know, we could bring SharePoint data into this. And I figure, why, you know, bother learning one new technology for a talk? Well, we'll make it two, right? So excited to talk about this today. Let's find out what we're going to talk about. So first, what is a Windows Store app? We'll tell you what that is, what it looks like, clear up any misconceptions you may have. We'll talk about how development is different, because I assume you're all developers because you're up here on the third floor. And why does Windows Store apps and SharePoint, why does that make sense? Why do I even care, right? So what are we going to take away from this? So we're going to start with the basic hello world of an app. And then you're going to learn which SharePoint APIs are suitable for working with Windows Store apps. So we're going to do things like binding and search, and then we're going to talk about notification and fun things like tiles and all that stuff. So all the cool new features that are make up a Windows Store app, we're going to see that all today. So what is a Windows Store app? Well, by now, you've seen, you know, the start screen, right? You're familiar with it. You know we have tiles, things like that. You know apps are large, they're immersive, they're full screen. They work great on touch devices. And they work pretty well using mouse and keyboard as well. But yes, it's touch first. It's designed, no Chrome, full screen experience, right? And yes, it's definitely designed for touch. Touch is big, touch is coming, you're seeing all these new devices come out. But it still provides a great experience for keyboard and mouse. So let's look at some facts about it. Well, it's a full screen window with multiple views. So basically, if you're familiar with doing Silverlight or WPF development, it'll probably be fairly similar. You navigate between pages, you create them with XAML or JavaScript or whatever, and you know, a very similar experience. It runs on a variety of devices. Of course, that's what makes it cool, right? As SharePoint developers, you're probably already familiar with the concept of sandbox, and Windows Store apps are no different. You specify what permissions you need, and the user grants it, and you have to stay within that sandbox. And we'll talk about some of those things upcoming, how the development is different, what you can do inside the .NET framework and all that. Of course, it's also an opportunity to make money, right? So you can put these things in the Windows Store, or you can distribute them locally on your own network. And it's going to be written in a language that you probably already have some experience with. So why does this work for SharePoint? Well, definitely a great way to visualize data, you know, scenarios like business intelligence, reporting, charts, things like that, you know, so suitable for a Windows Store app, right? Of course, it brings the SharePoint data to the desktop in a new, unique way. Let's face it, your executives love touch. They went out and bought iPads the first day they could, and now a lot of them are throwing them in the trash can and, you know, picking up Surface devices. I think we'll see this, you know, only grow as we time moves on. And a great app opportunity, right? So everywhere there's a store now. There's a Windows Phone Store, there's a SharePoint Store for making Office apps and SharePoint apps, and now there's this store as well. So for those entrepreneurs out there, this is another great opportunity. Maybe, you know, you can make something. It really is easy to develop, and you're going to see that today, how we can go from start to zero and have a nice app with data binding, pulling data in from SharePoint, search, and notifications. Of course, those new devices are cool, right? I mean, y'all got them, you've been touching them, you know. Who doesn't want to mess? Oh, show me up in front. So, okay. How do we get started? Well, first, we got to get your naming straight. So you might have noticed when I was talking, I haven't been really using the word metro, because in beta, the word metro was still around, and then it kind of went away. RTM came out, and now it's called a Windows Store app. So if you're actually trying to find information on it, like on Bing or something like that, Windows Store app is going to be your search term, not Windows 8 app. It'll still come up probably, but that's the terminology. So just when you're talking to Microsoft, that's what they want you to call it. How do you get started? Well, you're going to need at least two machines, right? So by now you probably know that SharePoint 2013 no longer runs on a desktop OS, client OS. So you can't run it on Windows 7 or Windows 8 directly. So that means you have to have another machine, right? And ideally, these two machines are on the same domain for authentication. We'll talk about why. And you need this client running Pro or Enterprise, and that's really just the help with authentication, but it's not required. So you'll have a SharePoint machine with, you know, maybe multiple SharePoint machines with SQL, Active Directory, you know, WAC, the things you want, workflow, however you want to split it out, right? And then you'll have a client running Windows 8. On a server, well, obviously you need to be running SharePoint 2013. You don't need Visual Studio installed, so we're not going to do a single thing on the SharePoint server today, development-wise, so we'll never actually even connect to it directly. And, of course, more memory is ideal, but for those of you already using it, you probably already know this, and SharePoint loves to consume memory. So on the client, you're going to be running Windows 8, and you're going to have to do a virtual or host OS. My example today, I went with virtual because my SharePoint environment has its own domain controller, and I want the client on the same thing, so we'll be running that virtualized. And that's why Pro or Enterprise is ideal, so you can actually connect to that domain. And I've gotten by with 2 to 4 gigs of memory for this, so between that and SharePoint, already you're looking at pushing 16, and don't be surprised if I get a memory warning, you know, even in the middle of my demos, because I'm really pushing it to the max. Last thing to point out is internet connection is required when you first create the app, and that's because of the license that you have to acquire with Visual Studio. So when you launch Visual Studio for the first time and create that new Windows Store app, if you've never done it before, it will go out, you have to type in your Live ID, and it will get the license, and it's good for a month. After that month, you have to do it again. So just keep that in mind if you're working like in an offline environment for some reason. So which language do we use? There's a lot of good choices, and you have an opportunity to see multiple of them throughout sessions at the conference. So HTML5 plus JavaScript. Mark Rackley is giving a talk on this later today, I believe at 3. So you can see that as an option. XAML with C#, and then Visual Basic or your other favorite managed code language. That's what we're going to be using today. And lastly, DirectX with native C++ for people developing games. Probably not the best choice for SharePoint, but you know, if you still love C++, by all means, go for it. So we're going to do a demo, and we're going to build a Windows 8 app as my machine locks here. And we'll see how easy to get started, and then what we're going to do is we're going to build on top of it each step of the way. All right, so this is Visual Studio. You've probably seen it by now. We're going to create a new project. And we'll give it just a second to fire up. And this new Windows Store category exists here. And we're just going to do a blank app here, and this kind of gives you a little nice screenshot of what it kind of looks like. And we'll just call this our SPC 12 app. I'm going to say OK. And we'll give it a second, and it takes a second. And this is where it asks you for your license. If you hadn't gotten one, I just did it a few days ago, so I shouldn't be prompted. And we'd be stopped pretty short, you know, with internet connectivity issues, right? So we'll give that just a second to create. And now we get app.xaml.cs. So this is the, you know, the kind of startup where you register startup things. We don't need it right now. What we do need is the main page. So main page is the first page that gets loaded. And the first time you run it, the designer is going to spin up. It will take a few seconds. You can actually go ahead and start working in the code view down below if you prefer. But it'll come up after a second. In my last test, it did take 15 seconds, if I recall. And what we're going to do is we're just going to draw a label on this page. And we're just going to, you know, do our first Hello World app, right? And so, simple as drag and drop, if it ever finishes loading. Trust me, it's not connecting over the network. So, okay. I'll wait just a little bit longer. I totally forgot to do this. There we go. So what it gives you is a, you know, a design surface that looks kind of like a tablet device of some sort, right? And so we'll just go over to our toolbox and we'll go find a text block. We'll drag it on there. And the text we'll put hello world. And of course you can style this as you want, and it'll be pretty small by default until you actually apply styles to it. But we'll just run it so I can show you what running the app looks like and what debugging looks like as well. So I went ahead and hit 5. It's starting the build process down there at the bottom. And the deployment has succeeded, and it registers it with Windows. And in just a second, we should see a splash screen. Looks like my computer's running a little slower than normal today. So that's an awesome splash screen. So of course, you can put your own logo there, right? So you've probably seen other apps you ran before. And there's Hello World, which you can see very tall at the, whoa! So, okay, so we're gonna build on this. Obviously, we want more than that. So after this, we're gonna do some data binding. We're gonna bring data from SharePoint into this app. But I wanna show you a couple other things, right? To get back to it, obviously there's no exit button in Windows Store apps if you haven't noticed by now. So to get back to Visual Studio, move your mouse up to the top left and click it. And you can always switch back if you need to. And then you can actually, you're free to, you know, go into the code and debug. So you can drop it. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. U code, that's what I was trying to do. And so you can drop breakpoints on things just as you would, you know, like that. So that's how you debug it. When you're done with it, you can just stop it and it will go ahead and close the app. So that's just the basic gist to get started. So let's go add some functionality to that. So what are some of the challenges with working with Windows Store apps? Well, there's authentication. You have to know how to do this. You have to make sure you request the right permissions when you create the app. Otherwise, you're gonna get access denied real quick when you actually try to connect to a service. The sandbox. So the sandbox effectively has a lots of parts of the .NET framework, but it's actually not everything. So you don't have references like system and system.NET and things like that you used to. It's now all included in this one assembly called .NET for Windows Store apps. So when you look at it in Visual Studio, that's all you're gonna see. If it's not in that, it just won't work, it won't compile. And so there'll be a few things like that that I'll point out. So how do we integrate SharePoint? Well, data binding obviously makes sense. So Windows Store apps make it really easy to bind data from an XML data source or any kind of other source that, you know, is in a collection. And so it has a great, nice boilerplate template that you just create, and all you have to do effectively is get the data and set it. It does the rest. Contracts. So contracts, we'll talk about more detail later, but the things like the charms on the right-hand menu of Windows Store, Windows 8, where you can search or view settings or things like that, or share. You can actually implement a contract to Visual Studio and add functionality to your app that way. So maybe you want to share something on SharePoint, for example, you can implement that. Then lastly, live tiles. So, and notification. With live tiles and notification, obviously we want to update the app. We want to present real-time data to the user, or semi-real-time, that gives them relevant information about what's going on in SharePoint. So we're gonna look at all these today. So data binding basically has three steps. We have to get the data from SharePoint, then we have to bind the data to the default view model, and then if we want, optionally, we can customize the template. So we can customize what data we want to display and how we want to display it. But first, to get that data, we need to know which SharePoint 2013 APIs we can use. So there's RSS. That's been around forever. It's probably not the most functional, and it's somewhat limited what you can get, but you can customize it and do some stuff with it. Of course, the client script object model is out there. They've expanded it greatly. Web services, and then REST. So which one do we want to use? Well, REST is actually probably the best choice most of the time. And the reason is, A, you can get the data out either using JSON or Atom XML. So depending on what programming language you're using, one is actually easier. It's pretty easy to query with the HTTP client class. Then we get more features, and there's no managed CSOM inside the sandbox, although there's ways to kind of hack around that by putting it in another assembly. It's an extra step. So, and of course, the web services are deprecated, if you haven't heard, so you shouldn't be writing solutions around them anymore. So REST is really a good choice. If you're not familiar with REST, basically it comes with a few components. Basically, you have your root URI, which is going to be your SharePoint server name. You're going to have the resource path, which could be something to a particular site, or and ultimately down to a list, or a collection of lists, or things like that. And then you can pass query string options, like specifying which site columns you want. To do that, we use the API folder, underscore API that is. And listdata.svc is still around, but it is deprecated. And so here's a couple examples down below. For example, to get the root web application and get info about it, you do server name, underscore API, and then slash web. And then you can append things onto it, like slash list and things like that. And also a search down there, which we're going to use as well. And once you kind of learn how to query it one way, you can pretty much jump to any of these other services, and the code to get data in and out is very, very similar. So when we want to get a specific list, which is what we're going to do for our data binding, you do underscore API slash web slash list, and then you use this get by title method and pass in the title of the list. So in this case, I did announcements in the second row, and in the third row, I actually specify specific columns I want. And we'll see when we start doing some of the examples that you can get some columns by default, but not all columns will come probably that you want, so you'll actually need to specify which ones you actually need. Let's see. Get my clicker to go. And so the XML kind of looks like this, and we'll look at it more detail in the demo, but basically you get a big elaborate XML, and you can actually study the XML and figure out other things that you can actually get by REST, looking at the headers and things like that, which makes it pretty interesting. So should we use Atom XML or JSON? Well, since we're using C#, XML actually makes sense. And so the reason is you can get that pretty easily with linked XML. If you're using JSON, or JavaScript, JSON would be a better approach. So keep that in mind. To actually do the querying, we have to use the HTTP client class. So this is slightly different had you written a regular .NET application that has a different class name. So you might be familiar with HTTP web request if you've ever written code that hits raw HTTP URLs. We use this class called HTTP client handler, and this is critical to actually authenticate. So if you don't use this to use the HTTP client class, you won't be able to authenticate and you'll get access denied. So this is where you specify either default credentials to use the credentials of the current user, or you can actually specify other credentials as well. Then we add headers to request the data in the Atom XML format, so you tell it XML or JSON, and then we're going to parse that data with linked XML. Once that's all said and done, we can use a data template to control what fields we're displaying and how to display them. So you can kind of think of this like CSS in a way. It has some like that, and it's also, you know, it's a data template. And you can specify it either locally in the page.resources element, which I'll show you where that is, or when you create a project that has the item, data binding project item, there's a XML file called standard styles that has the global. So think of that as a global CSS type thing for your application. So that's kind of an example of what that looks like. We'll actually look at it in the demo in detail. And lastly, the most important thing to actually connect to SharePoint is package.appmanifest. And what this is how you specify what permissions your app requires. So by default, your app can only connect to the internet. Does it provide for any authentication or anything else? And it doesn't provide anything on the local network. So chances are your SharePoint is on the local network if you're doing on-premises. So you need to check private networks, client and server. To actually authenticate, you need to also check enterprise authentication. If you don't do that, you can't authenticate over AD. So keep that in mind if you're doing any kind of authentication. And of course, if you're going to do other things, you can ask for things like the location or maybe the music library or the microphone or the webcam, things like that. If you're doing anything that your app does like that, you can request those as needed as well. It's also where you specify the name and the start screen and stuff like that and what the app was actually titled. So let's go through a demo. We're going to look at REST, and then we're going to look at how to data bind it, and then we're going to actually customize how it looks. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to go over to our SharePoint site, and I have a pictures library. And this pictures library, you know, looks rather similar to the Metro style or Windows style, as they call it now, you know, and I think we could replicate this in our Windows app. So we're going to get the data from SharePoint for this list using REST. We're going to bring it into our Windows Store app. So how we're going to do that is using REST. So up here, I've typed in my server name, and it's still called SP2010, ironically enough. And then I append _API/list. And what this gives us is a whole long list, no pun intended, of all the lists that are available on the site, as well as references. So we kind of scroll down, you can see, all right, here's the cache profiles list, and you'll see a bunch of lists that are not normally visible to the user, but ultimately you see all the lists that are available to you. So the nice thing about REST is you can type it in the browser, test it, and see if you have it right before you ever write a single line of code. Now, if I want to get the pictures list, all I have to do is say get by title, and then in parentheses, and then single quotes, I'll do pictures. And it'll give us a response. And this gives us general properties about the list. So you'll see things like the number of items and who owns it and things like that. So right now I have 10 items in the list, for example. But it doesn't give us the actual list items. To get the list items, we need to add /items to our URL. So I'm just going to add that there. And now we actually have items that we can start, you know, thinking about binding data to. So you'll see in here, here's the first one, and it has an author ID and something like that. But you notice there's not everything that we need there. For example, we do have image width and image height, but I don't have the URL to the image. And I need the image URL, obviously, to bind it and show it to the user. So we can fix that by using select. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do $select equals, and I'm going to specify some properties such as ID, title, file ref, which is actually the URL. Then we'll get some other things like the image width, image height, and the last modified date. So if we do that, you'll notice the format of the results changes a little bit, and now it's much more compressed and it only has the data you want. So this is also a nice optimization technique as well, to limit the data you're bringing back on the wire. So now we see that URL. That's something we can work with. So let's bring this into our app. So we're going over to Visual Studio again. And what we're going to do is we're going to add a new item to the app. So we'll just go to add new item. And there's a ton of templates that's in here, but the one we want is item detail. What's nice about it is it gives you a nice visual representation of what that's going to kind of look like. So if you click on them, you'll see that one's a details page. This one's for grouping items together. Pretty cool. So I'm just going to go with the items page, and I'm going to do change the name so it just says items page. And this pops up, and it's not actually an error. It's actually saying, hey, this depends on some common files. Would you like us to add them? So yes, we would. So this is what creates standard styles.xaml and some other things that are this items page is actually dependent on. So we'll give it just a second. And it creates, and we don't actually have to wait for the designer this time. So we're going to go into the code once it stops spinning on me. And what we're going to do is we're going to add some references, and then we're going to add the actual code that we need to make the HTTP request and get our SharePoint data. So I'm opening up items.page.xaml.cs, and the first thing we need is those references. So I'm adding system.net, HTTP, so that's for the connectivity. I'm adding system.xml and xml.link so I can actually do some LinkedIn XML when I get that data back. Now, what we're going to do is in this load state method, you look at a comment, it actually tells you what you're supposed to do. So this says, bind this collection to default view model.items. So our goal is to get our data, put it in some format it can tolerate, and bind it to that. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a simple bind data method. And I'm just going to create it like that. Then we'll just generate a method stub. Now we have that. Now the unique thing about this is, so we're going to be using asynchronous calls, new in the latest version of the .NET framework. So we have to add the async keyword, and that's why we need it in a new method. We'll get rid of that, and now we can actually start bringing the code in. So the first snippet I'm going to use takes the URL that we were just on. So you'll see get by title, pictures, items, and those are the fields that we requested. So it's the exact same URL that we were just on in the browser. We assign it to a variable, and we create an HTTP client handler. So this is what's going to handle our authentication by using .use default credentials and setting that to true. Now, we're going to take that, and so the HTTP client class, so if you've used HTTP request, this is pretty similar. This takes the HTTP client handler, so that's handling the authentication. And then we're going to add some default request headers. So in this case, we're saying we're going to accept application Atom plus XML. And the content type is going to be Atom plus XML. So that's how we say we want Atom. Now all we have to do is start to get the data. So we use the new await keyword. So this keeps us from having, you know, the right complex asynchronous code. And we just do client.getAsync. And we pass it the URL. And that goes out, gets the data, fetches it, and when it finishes, we call ensure success status code. And what that does is make sure we actually get the data back correctly. So if it doesn't get an HTTP 200, it will throw an exception, and of course we can handle that as needed. Once we get that, we need to actually read the content out of the HTTP response. So what we do is we use await, because it's also an asynchronous call, and we do response.content. And then we just do read as string async. That reads it into that string. And then we're going to create a string reader because we're going to load this ultimately into an X document object so we can start doing some parsing on it. Now, we just do create some namespaces. So let's look at this XML one more time just so you kind of see what we're doing. So this XML has a few namespaces referenced. So you'll see M and D and Atom and those things like that. So we need to be sure to reference those namespaces when we're using linked XML, otherwise it won't work. So our ultimate goal is to get down to the data here in this like file ref object and the image width and image height, that kind of data there. So to do that, we're going to have to iterate through each entry element, and then underneath that, there's a content element and a properties element before we ultimately get down to the data we want. So it's kind of verbose, but not too terrible to deal with. So that's what these three lines do. They add the namespaces, just the same ones that were up top. That's where I got them from. They're pretty much the same every time you do this. And now, what we do is we start parsing it. So again, I'm going to that entry element first. So entry here. And I'm going to say iterate through everything that's entry. And then I'm going to select the properties I want. So in this case, I'm going to set the title equal to the file ref, which is the actual path. So to do that, we go to the content element, then we go to the properties element, and then ultimately we say give me file ref and the value. For the image path itself, I need to append the server name to it. Now we could have gotten this programmatically somehow. We could have inferred it from settings or something like that. But for the sake of the demo, we're just doing a string.format to create a nice full URL instead of a relative URL. And again, it's just reading from the file ref element. Lastly, I append the image width and image height in a nice string so we can display that as well. So that's all we really have to do for parsing. At this point, we're almost ready to go. So what we need to do now is we need to assign this to the default view model. So what I'm going to do is do this.defaultViewModel, and then the In the collection, it's going to be the word items, and I'm going to set this to the items from my linked XML query. At this point, we're almost ready to start running, but there's a few more things we still have to do. One, this is a separate page, so we have to provide a way to navigate to it. So on our main page, we'll go back to it, and I'll just open it here in Designer. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag a button onto it, and we're just going to create a makeshift navigation button. And the content, we'll just call this data binding down here. And then I'm going to double click on it to create an event handling method. Or maybe I'll have to do it this way. There we go. So when the user clicks on the button, it was going to navigate us to the page that actually has the items. So the way we do that is with frame.navigate. And then it takes the type of the page you want. So you actually use the type of, and then we're going to do items page, which is the name of my page. So that's all you have to do to navigate. So it's pretty easy to do. At this point, we're almost ready to run it, but there's one more thing we have to do. And that is go to the package. Oops. Accidentally tried to move something there. Go to the package app manifest. So this is where you specify the name and what orientations you can support if you're talking tablet. But on the capabilities page, we need to be sure and check enterprise authentication and private networks. Now we can run this, and if all goes well, we'll click on it and it should show us some nice bound results. So I'm going to hit F5 and we'll compile. And we'll see our splash screen. I worked hard on that logo. Maybe y'all can do better. And now we have our button. We're going to click data binding. If all goes well, all right. So that's cool, but where's our pictures? All right, clap for that. It doesn't even look cool yet. I thank you. So what we're going to do, we can make this better, right? So this is just a default template that you get. So we're going to customize the template so we can actually, I don't know, see the pictures. Wouldn't that be nice? So let's stop this debugging session and add a few snippets of code here to make that happen. So I went ahead, I still have it running, so I'm going to hit stop. And I want to show you where this actually gets defined. So I'm going to open up itempage.xaml, and I'm going to press the little button here to flip so we have a little more room. And then I'm going to go down to our grid view. And in our grid view, it uses this template. And you'll see it's called standard 250 by 250 item template. So what we need to do is we're going to look for this. And where this is actually defined is under common, standard styles.xaml. And I'm just going to search for it. And there's where it is. So here's what it binds to by default. So it looks for something called image. Then it looks for a title and a subtitle. So that's how it binds. But we're going to do our own. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab my snippet, which looks better than their snippet. We'll close standard styles, and we can go back to our itemspage.xaml. And we're going to go back up to this section called pages.resources. In this section, you can declare the same type of data templates. And what I've done here is I've created one called default picture item template. And I'm making a 250 by 250 block. You can, of course, change this however you want. And now I'm binding to the image path variable that we got back on this page here. So there's image path, right? And I'm going to bind the title and dimensions, which I don't actually have anything really into title except for the file name. So now we'll see that all kind of together. So last thing we need to do is update our grid view to use our new template instead of the default. So I'm going to change that to default picture item template. Now we're going to run it again. And I may have accidentally cut base too much. Let's go see. Yep, I did. I accidentally added two of my two app name resources, so we can fix that easily enough. We get the splash screen running much faster now. And give it a second. What do you think? The goal of my talk here today is to make you kind of think get your head spinning and think about what you could possibly do in your organization. When your CEO, your CIOs, you know, pick up their new tablets, they're going to like stuff like this, especially if it has, you know, sales numbers or production numbers or whatever, right? Can you picture it? So, pretty cool. So let's take this a step further. I want to be able to search in my app because, you know, I'm a search guy. If any of you know me, I do a lot of work with search. And I want to be able to search SharePoint directly from my app. Let's see what's required to make that happen. So to do that, we use app contracts. And a contract is basically just an agreement between one or more apps and defines the requirements. And they're built with these special Visual Studio project items, which you might have seen when I was going through. There's several contracts that are included, things to do, you know, media sharing with like Play 2. There's search is what we're going to touch, share for sharing things on Facebook or even SharePoint, right? And there's also a settings one to actually manage your settings. The search contract is actually really good for SharePoint. And it allows us to interact with the charms menu on the side of the app, so the user can click on the search icon, use your app to search SharePoint. It has a nice touch-friendly interface, and it will automatically launch your app if it's not open already. And the other thing we can do is we can have it activate automatically in keyboard input. So if you've ever typed in the Windows 8 start menu, same kind of, you know, search results. To create a search contract, all we have to do is create a project item, and then we do our querying much similar way. We just call a different REST URL, basically. Then we kind of do some formatting to get the XML to the result it wants, and then we bind it to this.default.viewModel.results. The search SharePoint, well, the web service is deprecated, so you shouldn't be using those anymore. And the URL is __API/search/query, and then the first parameter is query text, and then the key part is including things in single quotes, which I apparently messed up on my slide. One of them got cut off. And you put your keywords in single quotes. Otherwise, don't use double quotes, it won't work. So let's look at how we can add search to our application. So back over in Visual Studio, we'll stop our debugger. And we're going to add a new page to our app. So I'll go to new item. And down here, you'll start seeing some of these contracts. So there's a file open picker contract, there's a share contract, but we want the search contract. And I'm just going to rename this to search results page. And it gives you a nice visual preview again of what that's going to look like. And now we scroll down. And this works pretty similar. There's a load state method, which we don't really need to mess with. What we want is filter_selection_changed. And we're going to add our code to this. But before we do this, we need to, of course, get our using statements. Don't want to forget those. So we're just going to do the same ones we did in the last class. And I'm going to go back down to filter_selection_changed. Here's the to-do blocks. Always are nice enough to tell you where you're supposed to put your code. It says, hey, put your bindable data here, and here's the things you can actually specify, such as item, title, subtitle. So what we'll do is we'll do another method stub. Which should just be created down below. And again, we need to include that async keyword. And one thing we need to do, since it wants the title and the subtitle and the image and things like that, I'm going to create a class to actually hold that to make it a little easier. So I'm just going to add a new item to the project. And this, we're just going to go to a simple class, and we're going to call this search result. Going to make it public because I like seeing public there every time. And I'm just going to add a four properties. So those are the things we're going to bind to: title, subtitle, image, and path. So we'll close that. We don't need it anymore. And then we're going to add our next snippet, which looks pretty similar. Before I show you this, though, let me go over into the REST interface and let me show you what search results look like. So I'm just going to use a bookmark. And so in this case, if you look at the very top, if you can barely see it, I'm sure in the back, the query text, I'm passing the word SharePoint. So I'm searching for what do I have on SharePoint on my site. And again, it gives us these properties that we can kind of bind to. So it has information about the item, such as who the author is, what the title of the document is, the highlighted summary, and things like that. So this is all data we can expose to our app in the search results page. We take the same URL, and we put it in the same format, and it comes across to what the user searched to us for in this default view model query text. So that's where it gets the data from. We just append it to the URL, and then we do the same thing. So it has the same HTTP client. We do the same client handler, same authentication, all the same as we did on the last. We ensured that the results came back successfully, and then we do the namespaces and all that fun stuff. And then here, I actually iterate through those documents because the XML is really verbose, and I didn't mean to open that. And so if you look, the actual data is 5 or 6 elements deep. So we have to really kind of work to get it and do a little parsing. And there's ways we could optimize this, certainly. But ultimately, we have to get the data down there. So I actually read through the whole result set and bring it into a new dictionary object. And then from there, I cast it using our new search result class. And then I get the title, the hit highlighted summary, the path, and the picture thumbnail, in case there's a thumbnail in the search results. Then I take those search results and I bind them to results. So that's all the code that's really required to make that happen. So let's go ahead and run it. No, there's one more thing I wanted to do. So back in mainpage.xaml, I want to add the support where the user can type what they want, the keyboard input. So they'll start typing, it'll actually start searching our app. So to do that, we need to add one more using statement. So we're going to do windows.applicationModel.search is what gives us access to search. And then on the onNavigated to, which is basically the first method that gets called when you're loading the application, or the page, I should say, we add our code. So we're going to do search pane. And then we call get for current view. And then we say show on keyboard input. Don't you like how Visual Studio automatically knew what I wanted since I typed it so many times? Isn't that a great feature? And I set that to true. So now we should be able to run this, and we should see some search results. So we'll give it a second. It'll register it, see our great splash screen again, and now we can search. So let's just see what we can find. Let's look for Houston. So hit enter. And it'll say no results, and if all goes well, we should see it pop in just a second. Or maybe not. Maybe I need to try a different search term. Let's try Denver. Okay, let's try one more. There we go. It just was slow. So that time I typed the word pictures, and that was the picture library that we had from earlier. And notice it bound the search results onto the page, and it gave us the thumbnails that search provided for us. Is that pretty cool? There's a lot of possibility here. Now, clicking on the results doesn't actually do anything at this point, and we won't add that today, but you can have it do whatever you want it to. So you could either load it in the web browser, so you can pass the user back off to the web browser to look at the result, or you could actually load it inside the app using its browser interface, or however you want to handle it. So I think it's really powerful. I think there's a lot of options there, and I think it's pretty cool that now I can search SharePoint without ever having to open a web browser. Let's add some more to our app, though. So tiles, notification. So you see all those spinny, flashy tiles on the Windows 8 start screen, and you want yours on there too, right? Let's talk about it. So tiles are a combination of text and images, which you probably figured about by now because you've been running Windows 8 for a while. It's defined by XML, and it's actually really, really simple to implement. Out of the box, there's 34 templates available for you to choose. They have any different kind of combination as you want. And basically what you do is you update this in your app. And that's kind of what one looks like. For the types of tiles, there's a default tile. And this is the, you know, your default start icon, right, in the old days. It's on your start screen. And then you can also do secondary tiles. So you see this in things like the People app and maybe, you know, the News apps and things like you probably already seen that, where you actually can pin additional information about your app into the start screen. So maybe you would go in and pin search results, for example, to the start screen. You could do something like that. Tiles come in all shapes and sizes. So there's ones with text, ones with pictures, ones with more pictures, ones with combinations of text, pictures, and, you know, thumbnails, and huge tiles, which I haven't actually seen one yet. Anyone see a tile that big yet? You can actually do double tiles. So lots of options. How does it work? Just XML. So this XML here, basically the key part is this binding template. And in my slides, in the references at the end, there's actually links to all these articles here that actually give you all the details of which one is specified. So basically it's an enum, and you specify the string of what you want. In this case, it's tile square block, and it gives us, you know, a big string and a small string. The one below, tile wide image and text 01, has an image and, you know, text. So that's all you have to do. Ultimately, you have to just create this XML somehow, read it from somewhere, and then assign it. Apps can actually notify users with tiles, badges, which are actually the little number inside the tile, toast. So if you've seen things from the mail app or something like that, thing pops out on the side, that's toast. And also on the lock screen. And the API for this is all related, and once you've done one, it's pretty easy to do the others. As for the types of notifications available, well, there's periodic and there's push. And so to do periodic notification, you can either pull at regular scheduled intervals, although you're kind of controlled on what intervals there are, and you can also schedule it and go at a given time. There's also push notification, which means, in theory, you could write something that leverages SharePoint push notification services and talks to Windows push notification services and actually have it update in real time. So this is how tiles can be updated. You can do it with the periodic or the push notifications, but you can also just do it while they're running in the app. Today we're going to show you periodic notification because it's probably the simplest for us to implement in this course, and push notifications would probably be 400 level, and, you know, we don't want to actually rely on the internet today anyway. But I hear the network team has got them back up. We should give applause to the network team because they've worked hard, and the last one I talked to, it only slept 4 hours since Sunday, so I know we have been struggling with that, but certainly give them applause. They were working harder than you. They haven't been on the blackjack table, I assure you. How does this work? So we update the tile XML to convey the update. Windows actually goes out and it sends a GET request to some URI that you define. Now, Windows can defer this by up to 15 minutes, so it's a time frame, right? So don't be expecting it to occur exactly when you do it, because it'll do it when it gets around to it. If you're disconnected or you're offline, it will automatically do it when it reconnects. It actually only takes a single line of code to do this, minus the using statement. So all you do is you set the URI to the XML document with tile information, how often this URI should be pulled, and when to start it. So how do we do it with SharePoint? Well, so, since we're dealing with XML, and all it is XML, there's no concept of, like, client-side code executing when pulling for this tile XML. All it is doing is updating XML. So there's no events or anything like that. So you can't write any code around it, right? I don't want to add any custom code to SharePoint either, right? I told you we were going to be using Visual Studio inside SharePoint, and I'm going to keep up with that promise. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to customize the RSS feed with content using the content query web part. So let's take a look at how that works. Again, I'm going to stop my debugger. And we're going to go back over to our site, and I'm going to show you what we're trying to do. So we've seen our pictures, but we also have this task list. So here's the great looking task interface that we get with 2013. I want to update my tile with the number of tasks currently in this list so I know how much stuff is going on. So to do that, we're going to make use of the content query by web, content by query web part. So what I've done is I've added one to the homepage, and there you see the same data, right? And down here is a RSS link. Now, it doesn't really actually matter where this is. It just matters that you've actually dropped this on somewhere. So if I click on this, you'll see that it's actually rendering the results in that tile format I just showed you. So it's saying currently I have 8 tasks. Okay, so how does this work? How do they actually do that? So if I go back here in our web part, we'll just edit the page real quick. I'll edit the web part. And I'll show you what we did. So for the query, I specified my task list there. And then down here under presentation, I check enable feed for this web part. Now the feed name and description don't actually matter, so you can type in whatever you want. In this case, I'm not using them. Now, how do I actually get the data in that format? Well, out of the box, the content query web part, when you use this RSS feature, it reads this from a file called rss.xsl that's in your style library. So we can go look at that. I'm just going to say I don't want to save my changes. And then I'll go to leave the page. And we'll just jump down to style library. See my great looking apps in there? And then XSL style sheets. And then this file is RSS dot here. So I've updated this. Now, technically, you can create multiple copies of this so it doesn't affect it globally. But for today's demo, I'm just showing you what we do. We'll just change the one that's out there. And what I've done is I've ripped out all the existing gut that, you know, renders the articles and stuff like that. So it's not even in RSS format anymore. We're just using the engine that produces it. And already there's a variable called row count, which says count dollar rows, right? So all I do is I say, bind the number of rows to this row count variable here and text ID equals 1, and then put the word task in ID equals 2. Using that, we should be able to actually update our Windows 8 app with the tile information. So how do we do that? Well, we're going to go over here. And first, I'm going to go back here and get our URL. So I'm just going to cut and paste that out. And we need to go back to mainpage.xaml. And we're going to add a new reference. So we'll do using Windows, oops, I totally messed that up, didn't I? It's dark up here. Windows.ui.notifications. So we'll add that. And we're going to add one more button to our page to make this magic happen. So I'm going to go to Toolbox, drag a button out here. And I'm just going to click on it, and now we have a new event handling method to handle that. And what we need to do is get this URL. I'm just going to say XML URL equals, paste it in, be sure to include my quotes. So that's our URL. And now I call tile update manager dot create tile updater for application, and you'll also notice there's updater for secondary tiles, so if you have secondary tiles, that's how you would do it. And then we say start periodic update. It takes the parameters, so we got to give it an URI format, so I pass in the variable of the XML URL, and then there's an enum for how often it occurs. And if you look at that, our only choices are daily, half hour, hour, 6 hours, and 12 hours. So you're kind of constrained on to how often it will let you update. We'll go ahead and do half hour. And close our brackets there. And now we can go ahead and run it. So we're going to click our new button. And of course, it doesn't actually do anything, right, that we visibly can see. But if we click over here and we look at our new app, you'll now see this particular app, SBC 12 app. You can see I've ran several demos, but now it says 8 task. So that's how we updated it. And now it's going to go out, it's going to pull that URL every 30 minutes. Now, obviously, I know you all want to get to lunch and stuff like that, and you're not going to wait for me to do that 30 minutes. So I can kind of emulate what a change looks like. And if you want to come by and see me later, I'll show you that it's actually updated by itself. But let me show you. So we're going to go back over to our desktop. We're going to go to that task list. And we'll do a new task. And so we'll say get bail money because we're in Vegas. And we'll create the task. And so now we have a new task on our list. And I'm going to just jump back over to our app. I'm going to hit the button again. And if all goes well, we should see it pop to 9. What kind of data are you going to put on the start screen? Think about it. Social. Social, yes. Somebody's doing that. Go see their talk. AC and Ben Robb, I believe. Great. This is great. So there's a lot you can do here. Let's wrap things up with our slides. So, to recap what we covered, now you learned how to create a Hello World app from the start. You know that REST is now the most suitable API for building these apps, at least when you're doing C#. You saw how we could bind pictures to an items page. You saw how we could add search to the charms menu to go directly against SharePoint. And lastly, you know it's possible to do notifications and give great data to your users. Some resources to send you away with. The first link is an article I wrote myself. It's how to use SharePoint 2013 REST API with Windows Store app. So basically everything you saw here today, step-by-step instructions on how to do that. And then, of course, the Windows resources for learning how to build Windows Store apps and the roadmap, which breaks down all the unique features of Windows Store apps and how to work with them. I think we're done a little bit early, so have time for questions. And, of course, don't forget to evaluate your session. And as Randy said earlier, don't evaluate it if you don't like it. But if you do like it, be sure and tell me. And if you, we always appreciate the feedback and comments. And my name is Corey Roth. Thanks for coming to see me. Have a great rest of the conference.